Oh my God, I wish I left that intro in. Just started recording the intro and my new MacBook Pros picked up my voice on Siri and started talking back to me in like an Irish accent. And I was like, who the fuck is there someone else in the room with me? But yeah, it's my MacBook Pro with an Irish accent. Anyway, welcome back to the Adam Courtney Show. I am super excited about this week's episode. I sat down with my brother, Jonathan, who has come from really humble beginnings, going to CIT, studying multimedia, moving to Darmstadt, then on to Berlin. And today he runs the CEO of a multi-million euro design agency, AJ and Smart. And I won't keep you any longer. I'm just going to cut straight to the interview. But I also just wanted to say thank you so much to everyone that's shared the episodes and like shared on Instagram and whatever. I really appreciate it. So here's the interview.
So my name is Jonathan Courtney. I am Adam's brother. I run a product design studio called AJ and Smart. I'm the CEO. I run that here in Berlin, Germany. And 20 people. We work with a lot of the brands that you know. We've been running it for 8.5 years. And that's it.
Sweet, sweet. Okay, so I want to go back to like the early days of you like in college. You went to CIT, didn't you?
Yeah, CIT.
Okay, so what did you study in CIT and like what were you like in school? Did you enjoy it or like were you good? Were you punctual? Were you always in class? And
I studied something called multimedia, which was one of those courses, which is just a little bit of everything for people who don't know what they want to do. Mm-hmm. It's got photography, illustration, design, programming, blah, 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 blah. And yeah. I actually think even though, school and college wasn't really something for me, I think it was probably a good choice because you could just like focus on whatever you want. And I decided to focus on design at the start and then programming and game programming. And then I focused more on filmmaking at the end. And I think the being able to try a bit of everything was really good for me. But in general, I didn't really go a lot. I didn't turn up a lot.
One class. Whole year, like.
I think I turned up enough to just not get kicked out, but wasn't really those sort of things. I have a very short attention span. That's also why I can't work for anybody. So I can't work for anybody. I can't do anything that if someone wants me to sit down and listen and do something that I don't have control of, I don't want to do it. So I didn't really.
I'm the exact same. Yeah, the exact same. That's why I've always kind of done my own thing as well. So you went to college in Cork for, was it 2 years, and then went to Darmstadt?
I went to Darmstadt because there was an Erasmus program. An Erasmus program is like a kind of, you know, whatever you call it, like, actually, what's it called? Like a exchange program. So I did an exchange program, went to Darmstadt, really liked it because they had a big film studio. And then I moved to Berlin because everyone in my class was moving to Berlin to work at design agencies. So I just moved to Berlin, like, and yeah.
I remember visiting you in Darmstadt. I can't even remember what year that was, but you were living in an apartment. It was a shitty apartment now. Like there was like 300 cats in there and they just smelled like fucking piss. Like how did you get by in those days? Like did you work anywhere? Did you work in a bar? Did you work anywhere on the side to get through college? And
I worked in two places at the same time. In the days where I didn't have classes, I worked as a quality assurance tester for a company called Tune Up Utilities. And in the nighttime, I worked in an Irish bar called An Shabin. And yeah, I was working the whole time to bring in the old moolah so that I could actually live.
But you wanted to be a film director. I remember at the start you were doing like your films and things like
films.
the old movies, like
films.
Where did like the design agency come into the picture there, like from pivoting from doing the movies to design?
Well, I was always making money from doing design stuff, like, you know, designing our mother's wedding website or designing flyers for the band. I was in a band for a while, so I designed the website for the band. I learned how to code the website, how to do the HTML, CSS. I was always designing my own magazines that I would print and give to people. It was more like a weird background hobby. And in college, I learned a bit about it, but to be really honest, not a lot. Then I moved to Berlin. I started hearing a couple of my colleagues or friends at college. They started doing something called like UI design or visual design, where they were designing apps. And I just started interviewing at places and got a job as someone who could design apps, and didn't have a clue what I was doing. But over the next like 6 months, the first 6 months in Berlin, I just spent my entire time buying every book and watching every single video, reading every single article on the topics of UX design and UI design, and essentially taught myself how to do it. I always had a passion for design and aesthetics, but I did do some, like, technically I studied, you know, in that as well, but it wasn't, I don't count that. And anyone who comes to AJ and Smartin says they study design, I'm like, yeah, I don't take that as a, I don't trust that. I want to see what you can actually do. I just learned on the job, and after 6 months of working in that company, I met a guy called Michael Smart in that company. He was freelancing there, and we decided to start our own thing, or just to try to start our own thing. And the only way we were able to do that was with doing a project for a company that was looking for an agency. So we pretended we were an agency, we got the project, then we had to actually become an agency and run to the finance center and make our company, establish our company. And since then it's existed.
That's crazy, like starting from literally nothing. Did you have any funding when you started the company, or did you
small? Neither of us had any money when we started the company. I'd only been working for 6 months in a real place, so I probably had like maximum 1,500 euro in my bank account, maximum.
And from then to today, what kind of numbers are you turning over revenue-wise today from zero funding?
From zero funding, well, it took ages to actually make a lot real money. It's 8 years in now, and we're just under, in euro, we're under 4.5 million euro. When I'm saying under is, I just don't know what the number is, because the end of year, we're still 2 months away from the end of the year. So it depends on what we make in the next 2 months.
So you started out, like, were you doing everything from like websites to designing logos and like everything?
Yeah, we were doing everything.
Yeah,
we're helping companies name their I mean, we definitely had a focus. The focus was UX, and that was also unique for a company to focus on something like that. So our slogan on day one was solve problems, decorate.
Or something. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and that's still our slogan on some pieces of our content. So from day one, we decided not to call ourselves a design agency, but we were doing everything. We were doing a mixture of everything, to be honest.
And then you introduced, what year was it you introduced the design sprint with Jake Knapp, and how did that come about?
In 2015, I was reading his articles. Myself and Mike were reading his articles on the GV blog, the GV design blog. And we were really interested in this thing called the design sprint. Well, actually, we were just looking for a better way to start projects. And we had a feeling that some sort of workshops would be great for that. We're trying everything. We're trying design thinking. We're trying business model canvas. We're trying lean UX. We're trying all of these things, and they just didn't seem to stick. And then we started trying to figure out, like, we tried to build the design sprint before the book came out based on all the articles. And basically we kind of came up with our own crappy version of it and ran that with a client in Berlin. We really, really loved it. A couple of months later, the book came out in early 2016. I read it on a flight, and it completely blew me away, and we decided to just go all in on selling our services, but in the design sprint method way. So that was about 2016.
So you eliminated all of the other services, like designing websites, and you just said, I'm going to go head on for the design sprint. That was a risky move, wasn't it?
Yeah, we just got rid of everything. It was risky, but we were doing shitty. I mean, we weren't making that much money. Right. It was really annoying to run the company. It was boring as well. So even though it was risky, it was also kind of not that risky because there was not much to risk. We were maybe making about 400K with three or four people, but myself and my co-founder were making no money at this point.
And how fast, when you introduced the design sprint, how quick was the growth in the company? So you had like three or four people working at the company, designing websites, doing logos, all this kind of stuff. When you introduced the design sprint, like what happened there?
Within a year, we passed our first million. Within 2 years, we passed our... The next year, we passed our third. We went from like 4 to 18 to 20 people within the space of 1 year, which was really chaotic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a mixture of the clients loved the process so much they kept rebooking. Yeah. But it was also really easy to explain and sell it.
Yeah.
But also we, and that's I think one of the maybe handful of very smart decisions I've ever made with this company, I decided to try to own the conversation online around the design sprint before I knew that it would actually take off so that we would have a massive head start. And that really worked out well. So we kind of owned the conversation on YouTube and all over the place.
Yeah. You also reached out to Jake Knapp as well. How did you how did you build the relationship with Jake? Did you just reach out through email or what way did you do that? Because having him on board is just solidifying your brand as well. It's massive.
It was massive. So this is an important lesson. A lot of people want to reach out to a lot of people want to reach out to people who can do something for them, but they never think about the fact that, you know, they need to deliver value to be able to get something from these people. So I didn't just reach out and say, hey, Jake, can we meet because I want to make my agency more money? I actually wrote an article, a case study about how we did a project for the United Nations using the design sprint process. And I constantly quoted the fact that Jake created this process and that this process was a major game changer for us. And I made a really nice case study that I sent to Google Ventures so that they might want to feature it on their website. And that's actually not me asking for a favor. That's me saying, hey, this might be a good way to sell the book. You know, this might be a good way to sell the process and make it even better. So I sent that, didn't ask for any favors. Jake replied to me on the same day and he was like, oh my God, that's amazing. This is so cool. We're going to put it up on the website. And I was like, oh, thanks. That's really cool, blah, blah, blah. And then I said in that email, I was like, by the way, I'm going to be in town next month. We've been working on a lot of other cool projects, including another one for the UN. Would love to show it to you. Would love to show you what we're doing with your amazing process. And for him, that was a really interesting thing. So I flew to San Francisco with not much other reason to fly there, met him, presented him with an offer, and that offer was, would you like to join us? So the month before, I had run the first design sprint boot camp, and as far as I know, this was the first paid training that any agency had done for the design sprint, and it was a proof of concept for me to show Jake, hey, if you come to Berlin, or if we go to San Francisco, we can come here. We can get all the people to come to the event. We can run the event. You come to it and you take part and you can get half of the revenue. We'll give you half of whatever we make. And he was just like, I mean, it's a win-win. It's like, okay, so you pay for me to fly to Berlin. You host this event. You fill it up. You show me how you guys are selling the design sprint as a training. And yeah, that was basically it. We ended up doing like probably like 20 of these, started doing the podcast together, which was a really big deal, at the end of 2017, when was the podcast? I don't know. Maybe the end of 2018 or something, or 2017. And his endorsement has been huge.
How many downloads do you have in that fucking podcast? It's insane.
Per episode, we have that are actually counted around 12,000.
Jesus.
That's every episode. That's every week.
That's insane.
But yeah, I think I'd say the safest bet is to say 12,000, but I think it's a little more every week. It's a little more than 12,000 every week.
But all of the, like, so I remember like around 2 or 3 years ago, you started to go really heavy into social media. You didn't really have much of a presence on social media, like your Instagram, Facebook was kind of ticking away. And I remember coming over 1 year and, you know, doing a few posts, doing a few videos.
Yeah.
When did you just say, fuck it, I'm just going to go all in and spend a ton of money on the social media thing? And why did you go after the social media? Do you spend a lot on the social media?
Oh, yeah. December 2017, I wrote a Google Doc, which is how I used to basically do the planning on my own for AJ and Smart for the year coming up. And I would just write it all in a Google Doc. Here's what I think should happen in 2000. And I think it was, let me think, it would have been 2000. And when do we start our YouTube channel? Let me have a look here. I'm actually curious.
Like 3 years ago, wasn't it?
I think it would have been either 2 or 3 years ago. I'm just really, really curious. So I'd say it's December 2017. I wrote a Google Doc, and in this Google Doc, basically the truth is I was listening to Gary Vaynerchuk's podcast, looking at all his videos, getting really obsessed with his stuff and being like, oh, fuck, this stuff, this Gary Vaynerchuk stuff is amazing. It was December 2017. And so I basically wrote a Google Doc that said, our big goal for 2018 is awareness. I'm going to grow the brand awareness of AJ and Smart through content production in the Gary Vee style. I wrote in there that I'm going to find someone to do this. And I didn't really know how much to invest into it. So I brought someone on board, and then I brought another person on board, and then we started doing ads. But it was all very random. And then in 2018, it got a bit more serious. And at the end of 2018, I brought in another person to do weekly videos, and we just started going all in on it. So it's hard to say exactly how much I invest, because, you know, we had a three-person team and have a three-person team doing content production at all times, even more actually now. But we spend like 80K per month on ads.
Jesus. On like Facebook, all every kind of like Instagram, Facebook, Google ads.
Yeah, Instagram, Facebook, Google ads.
Oh my God, that's insane. How much, so just to give people an idea of how much it costs to run a company of this size, per month, like would you have like a ballpark figure of, you know, like everything from your advertising to your like employee paychecks, like the whole picture? Yeah. How expensive is it to run?
It costs 280,000-ish per month to run AJ and Smart. So it costs over 3 million to run it per year.
Holy shit.
That's
fucking scary. But you don't seem stressed out at all by any of this. And I've always been like,
I am stressed out.
Oh, of course you're stressed out. You do take it. You do. How do you disconnect from being this CEO that has to go into the office every day and, you know, get the work done? How do you do anything to unplug? Do you meditate? Do you read?
I was better at it at the start, because the first few years we wanted it to be like a lifestyle business, you know, Tim Ferriss style.
I remember.
So I was way better at it in the first few years. I was meditating. I was, you know, doing more working out and
like a Buddha. Yeah.
Yeah. I was basically a Buddha. And so I'm
fully
naked,
like in the office.
I'm a full on Buddha. So yeah, for me, it was really, I was really able to keep separated from it at the start. And this year, I wasn't good at it. I was actually stressed a lot because I took over the company. I bought my co-founder shares in January, which meant that I was the only person owning the company, you know, owning the 250,000 euro per month company. And it also meant that I wanted to do things my way, which also meant that I had to let quite a lot of people go. And I made that decision kind of at the start of the year once I took over. I didn't know exactly who it would be, but I knew it would be very crazy. I knew it would be a lot of people. And so from the day I took over till today, we went from like 22-ish people down to 14 right now, and now we're hiring back these people. So within about 2 months, we'll probably be back near 20 again. Not the same people, but are hiring new people for those roles. So yeah, that was really stressful, and there was no way to avoid it. I tried to avoid it by joining like entrepreneur groups, like where you can talk about the challenges of being an entrepreneur. There's something called EO, which is really good for that. But yeah, this year, basically because of the new baby and because of taking over the company, I didn't do a good job of it. So I can't give good advice. The advice would be, you know, make sure you're still doing exercise, make sure, you know, do meditation, unplug when you get home.
All that kind of stuff.
I didn't do any of that stuff. I just became more stressed. It's getting better now. I'm kind of getting a bit, like I've removed, you know, all social media from my phone, which is super important for me because I'll just keep checking that shit. So yeah, I removed all social media from my phone. I'm trying to build, I can't build rules. So if there's a, if Instagram's on my phone, I'll check it. So I've decided it's not on my phone anymore. I have a separate phone at home.
You have two
that
phones,
I only
don't
check
you?
In the morning.
Social media.
Yeah. And one is my social media phone. And I broke that rule for the last 2 months and I realized it was more stressful again.
12 phones.
So yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I'm the same. Something that I struggle with is like, you know, staying motivated. I get these bursts of like 3 months of like nuclear motivation and I just do so well in one thing that I focus on. And then I kind of fall off and I just get super like unmotivated. How do you like stay motivated on the day to day? Like you've consistently kept this company running for the past, what, 8 years?
Yeah, 8 and a half.
How do you like your day to day? Do you have like a set routine that you stick to that keeps you in check?
No, I'm really bad at that too. I get motivated and then I get really unmotivated. I was really unmotivated the whole summer. So I was not, I'm totally not in the mood to run the business. The thing is, I have this mantra that getting started is more important than being right. So I just started the company, we started hiring people. And now I think I need, for me to do stuff, I need to have no choice. So I have to run this company now because if I don't, everyone loses their jobs and I have to do something different. So I think for me, I mean, I try, especially in the first few years, it was very chaotic. I was trying like, I'll do this business, I'll do that business. I had like four businesses probably in the last 10 years because I was just fucking around. But I think you have to just accept you're going to have those really excited and then not excited all the time. For me, having a structure, so having a business where I just have to come in every day, I think I just forced myself into the situation where I had to do it. But actually what did help was, I think what did help me was kind of while the first few years of AJ and Smart, because it wasn't that successful, I would sometimes work in other companies as an AJ and Smart freelancer. And that helped me to realize that I really don't want to work in another company. And so that kind of forces me to actually get up and come here. And the thing is, I have to, if I didn't come here, people would find it weird. That's the thing. If I just didn't turn up, people in this office would lose their motivation. And so, and then they wouldn't work and then we'd lose money. And so I think about it that way. I'm like, fuck, I actually kind of, technically no one can tell me what to do, but if I don't turn up, then I might hurt the company.
Yeah, you have to show up because you've created this company and it's moving now. If you don't show up and you don't, if you neglect that, then it's just going to fall apart. With me though, like when I was in London, like I loved my job, but I'm the same as you. Like I can only work for myself. And when I came back to Ireland, I just said that I wanted to run a similar thing as what I was doing in London, like doing the PR. But I just said I wanted to reach out to like crazy people like Ty Lopez and like Lance Armstrong, and that's my day to day. But I have loads of different things where I'm doing the events and things as well. But no, I'm just trying to see any kind of short questions that I have here. It's so funny. I've never interviewed anyone.
I never interviewed anyone.
Check out this suit. Look at this suit.
Look at this suit. I can't do it.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you, These are just funny. Do you have any like pre-bed routine or like morning routine?
Yeah,
like,
I shit myself.
What do you have for breakfast? I shit myself before.
Yeah, I shit myself in bed. That's
really
it.
Important.
No, I have a simple one. I don't bring my phone into my room. That's important.
That's impossible.
I just leave my phone in the kitchen. Don't bring it into my room. And I only read on my Kindle. And I only read fiction, never anything like a business book.
Fiction.
And so that for me, if I break any of those rules, I don't sleep well.
I am fucking murder for bringing the phone. Like, I'll have the phone. I also have this new TV at the end of my bed, a massive flat screen.
Oh, no.
And I just have this laptop as well. So I have just so many things like stimulating the mind.
No, that makes me not sleep good because I just keep looking at stuff. And I think the best thing for coming down is really just having the Kindle in the room reading fiction. I've been every so often I break that rule and I start bringing the phone into the room again, and I actually start feeling worse day to day.
Are you good at like switching yourself off from like your business to like your family life, like getting home and just switching off? No, not at all. Yeah.
No. I used to be better, but now, you know, as the business gets bigger, I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to just remove things that bring me back into the business during the evening. So I'm trying to not check Slack, I'm trying to not check email, I'm trying to not check social media. But it's a major addiction. Like being an entrepreneur is very addictive in a bad way too. And I'm like, when my co-founder was here, it was a bit easier because he was a lot more relaxed than me. And sometimes that would rub off on me. I'm like, he's like, okay, I'm going, you know, on a holiday. And he would just like dump his phone and you'd never hear from him for 10 days. Still the company still survived, but I'm like, yeah. I'm not able to relax.
Yeah, I remember you like years ago, you were like doing the Tim Ferriss kind of vibes. You wanted to just have this business running and like travel the world and all this. But I think you enjoy the pressure of having this massive machine running at all times. I think you enjoy that. And I'm the same as well. When, like, at the moment, I have so many events going on at the moment, and I've partnered with other people running big events, and I just love the pressure and the stress of that. Yeah. I hate when I don't have things going on, and that's when I get really unmotivated.
Same. Yeah. I need to have the pressure. It's a weird, I think that's a hard balance to make healthy is the, if you have an entrepreneur's kind of attitude, it's... I think it's hard to be mentally healthy while being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly. Just going back a small bit, would you say that any of your, like, how did you start as an entrepreneur? Were you always like this? I think me and you are very similar, that we've always kind of thought of ideas and just went head on and executed them. I remember years ago, like when you were a kid, you had like Tunnel World, you were selling fish, you were doing all this kind of crazy shit. Were you always like this?
Yeah. I think it was natural. I think that's also because our mother and father were entrepreneurs too. So
yeah,
I think
mom, like every fucking day, drilling it into us with the positivity.
But also all the different businesses.
Yeah.
Just trying loads of different businesses. I think that's probably like a kind of a mixture of in the personality, but also in the family. You see a lot of entrepreneurs there. Parents are often entrepreneurs.
Yes, that's the best way. I'm interviewing fucking Ty Lopez next week.
What? Really?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Are you still doing work with
garage? Them? Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Garage!
Here in my garage. He's so funny because when I talk to him on WhatsApp, he's still in character. And I'm like, Ty! It's so funny. He never comes out of character. Did I tell you I'm getting laser eye surgery on Friday?
That's really cool. I want to get that too.
Shit.
I would also be shitting myself, but I would also want to do it.
Yeah, I'm just going to go for it. You should do it, 100%. It's like... removes your eyes. Like,
yeah, it's like, oh, sorry, I didn't want laser eye removal.
I didn't want you to remove my eyes completely.
Perfectly smooth face.
Fuck's sake. What? So, yeah, I'm going to finish up soon because I like the short podcast.
You should tell the audience what my name in our little online chat here is.
Oh, it's called Penis 4. It was Penis 3.
Penis it was 4. Penis, and in, then it was Penis 2. Then it was Penis 3. It was because I kept my audio kept fucking up, so I had to keep logging back in and putting another name. So I'm the CEO of AJ and Smart, and my online name is Penis 4.
So your day today, John, you're going into the office. What is your day? You're waking up. What time are you waking up?
All right. So
morning?
I get these days, I get up about 8 because the Marina brings the baby and puts her on me.
puts her on me.
Like the baby. Yeah, she's just close to 1 year old, and so
cute.
I have to get up at 8. There's no choice. Although that's not that early. Some people, normal people, get up at that time anyway. Yeah, and then I have a really chilled long morning. That's also the advantage of being the boss. You can just kind of do whatever you want. I tend to chill from 8 until about 9:30. I don't have like a really. I just basically have breakfast. I try to avoid looking at too much social media. I just get up, brush my teeth, just kind of make breakfast. So I'm not meditating. I'm not working out. Depends on the time of the year you ask me. Sometimes I might be in a workout phase or something. Anyway, then I cycle to the office. Takes me 6 minutes, which is great.
So handy.
I take a walk around the office, say hi to everyone. It's spread out over one floor of a building. So there's two sides to it. So I go, say hello. I see what's up.
It's an amazing office.
It's
holy
really nice.
Shit, yeah. That office. You've got another side to it.
Yeah, it's two sides. It's really great. It's huge. So yeah, then I just fucking go to my desk. I have a room in the office. It's called the Executive Lounge. And it's really written really stupidly on the outside and like really childish writing as a joke. And I just check my Slack, check my emails. And generally, I have my job is to steer the direction of the company. So I'll generally have meetings with the different people managing the company here, talk about you know, what issues we're having. It's just a mixture of big picture strategy, like what are we going to do next year? What should we do? You know, what should be our big picture strategy? And also then small annoying things that I have to deal with all the time, like fucking, can we get that carpet removed or can this person
clogs in the toilet,
this person's having asked for a salary raise request but I don't think they should get one, and just things shit like that. But the job, my job, like when it's the most valuable is when I have to make hard decisions. Like if you don't make hard decisions as a CEO, I heard this yesterday on Tim Ferriss's podcast with Ben Horowitz. He said something like, if you don't make hard decisions as the CEO, then people will just keep doing what they were going to do anyway. It's actually your job to make these hard decisions. People aren't going to make these hard decisions. Only the CEO will make them. Like for example, letting people go and or killing a project that everyone loved or... these are the kind of things that I have to do on it.
So are you letting people go yourself? That must be fucking so hard to do.
Nightmare.
Christ.
Nightmare. What's worse is not letting people go and letting them, letting their careers kind of just rot.
Yeah. What was that book again?
Because you know that.
I can't remember the book.
Radical Candor.
Yeah.
Radical Candor. So basically you have a choice. You either, most bosses just let people stay really long and know that they're not going to go anywhere, know that they're holding the company back, know that they're not happy and you're not happy, and just get passive aggressive and don't do anything about it. And that's what I was doing because that's the natural thing you do. Mm-hmm. And this year I decided not to do that anymore and take it into my own hands. And yeah, it was a nightmare. But actually every conversation, it was a nightmare in my own head beforehand, before the conversations. But the conversations themselves were actually all very positive. You know, these people know they shouldn't be there. They know it. They know their stock.
Yeah.
And you actually free them actually by telling them they have to move on.
Exactly. But you also like mostly really promote anyone that you do let go. They're all up in your Instagram and you promote them. And they end up going working for like some of the biggest companies in the world. And you help
everyone leaving
process.
Yeah, everyone leaving AJ and Smart's going to get paid more somewhere else. The brand is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. They know they'll have more money somewhere else. Maybe not as cool a weird environment with no investors and just like this weird wacky place, but actually everywhere else they go will probably be more chilled and make them more money.
Yeah, exactly. So where do you see, do you have like a trajectory for Adrian Smart? Do you have an end goal? Do you want to sell the company, or where do you see it in the next couple of years? Where do you see it going?
I really don't have any end goal at all.
Sell it for 1 billion. Yeah, you just
yeah, 1 billion. I think the thing is, if you sell it, then you have to work for someone else again.
Yeah.
And I don't think I can do that. I can't work for someone else. So I honestly have no fucking idea. I could say anything right now and I would probably change my mind anyway. I guess I'd like it to run for another 5 years. I'd like to enjoy it more than I did this year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd like it to continue to be this weird kind of anomaly of a company that people can't exactly figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
How have the online courses went? You introduced those this year.
Amazing.
They're bringing in fucking trillions, aren't they?
They're responsible for 2 million of the revenue on their own.
Yeah. Serious?
Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Holy shit. That's intense. I did the level up course. It was really...
Oh yeah, we're relaunching it at the start of January.
Sweet. Right. I'm going to do that about 40 minutes, all right? But I want to... So everyone listening to this, it's a lot of people in CIT, it's a lot of people in college, people that want to start out as an entrepreneur. What advice would you give to like a college graduate that's confused, that doesn't know where to go, that like, you know, how would a college graduate reach out to someone like you and get a position at a company like Adrian Smart?
Well, don't is the first thing.
You can do it.
Okay. I've made so much content around how to reach out to people who are in a position who could give you what you want. And most people get it wrong. Most people don't understand how this works. And I think a lot of the kind of information out there is just completely fucking wrong. Mm. Like, first of all, a company like Adrian Smart is maybe not the ideal first company to reach out to, because Adrian Smart is like, we see it as like a Michelin star restaurant. Number one, it's really hard to get in just because of the size of the company. Mm. But also it's really hard to get in here because we're extremely competitive internally in terms of skills. So it's not maybe worth applying for Adrian Smart. Mm. I would apply to, you know, other larger companies first to have a look. Or, you know what? I think the best place to learn everything would be to work at a startup. Fuck agencies. Agencies are terrible places, besides Adrian Smart. But you probably won't get into Adrian Smart, so don't try here first. But I think startups, being a designer at a startup where you get to try everything, where you get to be the person doing the UI design, the branding, whatever, just go in as a junior designer, into a startup, learn what you need to learn. And don't even try to start a company. Here's the thing I would say about, you know, the entrepreneurship side of it. Don't try to start a company. Mm. If you are an entrepreneur, you won't have any other choice. You will have to start a company. Mm. People are always talking about like trying to how should I know, blah, blah, blah. You just won't be able to do anything else. So go work for someone else. Go work for a startup. Don't overthink it. Don't be arrogant about, oh, I don't want to work here. I don't want to work there. Mm. Don't be arrogant. You don't know shit. No one wants you. So just go wherever you can be taken, like I did at the start.
Yeah.
The worst thing is to be arrogant. Like if I meet a young arrogant designer, I 100% I'm sure, even if they're good, I switch off immediately. If I don't think someone is actually willing to learn, I just switch off. So be humble, check out whichever design job you can take at a startup, preferably a corporate. You won't learn a lot very fast. And just start, and you'll soon find out whether or not you can actually work for somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I was like me as well with the internship in London. I was always like, fuck it, I'd really love to work with Ultra Music Festival. And I just said it to the boss of the company. I was like, I'll come over for 2 weeks. Just literally give me 2 weeks. You don't have to pay me anything. And I actually, it was a 3-month internship and I got the job after 2 weeks and traveled the whole world with them for 1 year. And it was the most amazing experience. The pay was shit. Money was terrible, but the experience I got was unbelievable. I've worked with some of the biggest artists in the world, and you wouldn't ever
Picasso
learn. Picasso, Leonardo da Vinci,
Michelangelo,
all these kind of guys. But now I know how to build relationships with anyone, you know. I know how to execute like PR plans for any kind of business, any kind of client. But yeah, I think just reaching out to a company, a small company at the start, do an internship and just get started that way is
yeah. I mean, people are so fucking, you know, they're like, people are so arrogant about all this free work stuff as well, especially designers. I would never work for free.
I know.
You're not even allowed to work for free at AJ and Smart. We would not even take you for free. So there's another side to it. Yeah. Like at our company, even if you came here and said you would work for free, we still wouldn't take you. It's not about that. Yeah. You should be paying the companies who can actually teach you a lot.
Exactly.
Because you're going to get that back 10x later. Right. Yeah. I think that's like something that people don't realize. And a lot of people also get angry at me when I say that. But first of all, we pay our interns. Second of all, we still wouldn't take you for free. It's literally a, you should be happy if you start getting your first jobs if you don't have a lot of experience. And I think a lot of young people coming out of college are like, oh, I would never do something for that much money. I would never. And it's like, okay, so you have a choice. Either you sit around complaining for 7 or 8 months, Or instead, you could be basically taking a free course in learning how to do stuff by doing a job and then maybe at night going to work in a bar or something. Yeah. I don't know.
People are so arrogant about it. Like they say, oh, but I've studied for the last 3 years.
Yeah, it means nothing.
Paid from the get-go. Yeah.
Yeah, it means literally someone tells me they've studied for the last 3 or 4 years. I'm like, cool, so you did nothing for the last 3 or 4 years. So you have no experience. So you're starting from absolute zero. Like someone coming in from studying into AJ and Smart, it's a rude awakening. You don't get to take anything with you from college into the real world. Exactly, besides the fact that, you know, you got to have some fun and stuff and met some people, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's not. You're starting from zero.
Yeah, exactly. Like with me, with my clients, I basically reached out to Ty Lopez through email, and it took about a month. I was like, can we just jump on a call, on a quick call? And I just said, look, I'll do your PR for 1 month for free. I'll do it for 2 months if you want for free. And he was like, oh yeah, okay, if you do good on the first month, I'll pay you €3,500 per month. He's paying me that every single month because I gave him a free month. Same with every single client that I have right now. When I left the other job, I just said, look, I'll give you a free month. If I'm good, then hire me. If it doesn't work out, then that's fine, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's important to offer your services for free. So many people especially, are so arrogant.
Especially, yeah, when you're not known. Money. And now, like, if someone asks me to do a talk, I say, yeah, €25,000, like, immediately, right? And back, like, 3 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, free. You know what I mean? You get that money back.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's an important lesson. But yeah, I think that's fucking great. I thought it was only going to go on for about 20 minutes, but we're at 45 minutes, Jan.
45 minutes. 45 minutes.
Where can people find you? Where's the best place to reach out to you?
My podcast, I think.
Jake and Jonathan.
Jake and Jonathan.
You know, I religiously listen to that. It's fucking sick.
Yay.
But it's very like casual, conversational.
Oh, it's very
hilarious
casual
as well. But what's your Instagram? Jice Cream, isn't
it? @JIceCream.
Brilliant. All right, brilliant. All right, Jonathan, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much, Adam.
Oh, sweet. I'll actually come over to Berlin soon as well.
Yeah, come on over.
I need to come over to see the old Baba.
Come over to see
definitely within the next
Baba Child.